This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's bring in James in. No, James, don't mind us. We're trading Giannis. It's fine. It's fine.
I was wondering, what in the world? Now, what would cost you?
Well, yeah, we're trading Giannis.
So check it out. This is what you would. This is who could always get it done. If they really want to, is OKC.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They've got picks. They could
trade. And that could be disastrous.
They could trade one. Like, I'm not saying they'd have to or whatever, but they could trade Jalen Williams or Chet.
I think it probably costs you both and some picks. And that's a steep price, but that's what happens when you have a superstar.
You could only get one. If I'm OKC, like, I'm giving you, like, I got seven picks I'm about to give you, and I'm giving you one of my franchise
And I have
guys.
To take Chris Middleton back.
Well, damn. So you can't get Chet and Jalen Williams, but you can get one of them and these seven picks.
You either keep Chris Middleton and I send both, or you leave one and you send Chris Middleton to me.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that would have to move for any of that to happen.
Well, Chris Middleton might have to retire. God bless him. I hope that's not the truth, but
he's had a good career. I mean, that's just tough for him.
That's just tough for him. As we welcome in our Kings Insider from the Insiders, our man James Hamm here with this hammer. Let's switch our attention from a completely fictitious trade that's got nothing to do with nothing involving Giannis Antetokounmpo to the reality of the Sacramento Kings now being at 2-2. And let's start here. Hammer, we put any stock into the fact that the Sacramento Kings won these last two games while holding their opponent under 100 points?
I mean, like, look, I don't want to give go crazy about the defense at this point, because those two teams are not good at all. Either one, the Blazers and the Jazz, are both just a hot mess. And so I don't want to go overboard, but look, that's how the season goes. You know, you're going to have 30 games against teams that aren't very good, at least, and maybe more than that. And so when you get teams like this, you put stock in the fact that they went, they took care of business at home after dropping two games, and then they went out on the road on a really weird back-to-back that's not always an easy one. And they've made the Jazz look like a JV team. And so, so I do put some stock in the fact that they won, and that they won convincingly. But I also, like, the long game here, I don't know where their defense is and how long it's going to take for it to be, like, NBA competent.
You think it's not NBA competent now?
I mean, for right now, but, like, let's see what they look like, not against the next four teams, but let's see what they look like after that. You know, like,
so you think that what we saw the last 2 days, I won't find anyone who says this, was a product of their opponents more than anything else?
I don't think it's a total product of the opponent. I think that, but you can't discredit who they're playing. So yeah, it's a little of both. Like, I think they played better defensively, but they also played against two teams that just, you know, don't have LeBron James and Anthony Edwards and Anthony Davis and, you know, all Julius Randle. Those teams don't. And, you know, to be honest with you, neither do the teams coming up. You know, we're seeing, like, a weird kind of twist here early in the season where, you know, you're playing a bunch of teams that are very, very beatable. And that's not always the case for the Kings. A lot of times they come out of the gate. I don't love their schedule. I don't love that, you know, this trip is an 8,000 mile trip. That doesn't make any sense to me. Even the, you know, Atlanta all the way to Toronto, all the way back down to Miami and then home. That's crazy. But at the same time, like, none of these teams are teams that you just pencil in as a loss. And, you know, so yeah, I think I want to see how they handle this, how they handle playing bad teams at this point, and whether or not they can start racking up wins like we think they can.
And you're right about that, Hammer. I talked about, you know, these last two games when, you know, you started off 0-2, you needed to get a win, you needed to get yourself back above water. You got two teams that, if the Kings are who we want them to be and expect them to be, yeah, it's no problem saying, yeah, we should beat Portland and Utah. And I wanted to see how they handled that. And they handled it perfectly. That's exactly mm-hmm. what you do to those types of teams. And one of the things that I'm pretty confident in, especially after seeing yesterday, is I don't think they're going to lose too many of those games. I think the talent on that team, the maturity brought on by DeMar DeRozan and all these guys just being a year older, Mike Brown talked about it a little bit yesterday as well. I think they're going to go into these type of games, and some of them being like the next four, and they're just going to look to handle business. And like I said, it was like a snake. They're just going to suffocate these guys after a while, the teams that just don't have enough talent to keep up with what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I really hope that that's the case. And I think this team has three guys that, for any team in the league, are very tough to defend. You know, DeMar DeRozan has been doing it for 16 years, but Fox and Sabonis are both extremely high-level players as well. They're high-level scorers. They're guys that, you know, when they go to put the ball in the basket, there's very few nights during the season where they're just completely off, mm-hmm. especially Sabonis. So, yeah, I think when it comes to these teams like this, what we're hoping is that we see the 2022-23 Kings, the team that had resiliency, the team that went in against bad teams and took care of business almost every single time the entire season. Mm-hmm. I think they might have had one bad loss the entire year. And that is a sort of a mentality and a personality that I hope they develop this year. And, you know, you can look at the 2-2 schedule so far, and man, that both Minnesota and the Lakers, they're playing pretty well, and they're playoff teams, and they have really, really good star level players, superstar level players. And so what do you look like against all these other teams? And that's, you know, again, they did not take care of business at all in this way last season. And you hope that that personality is gone, and they've developed a new personality, and some of it can be some of that 2 years ago personality.
Well, let's stay talking about the superstar level players, because the Sacramento Kings got one right now. They might have a couple, but specifically, they have one in Domantas Sabonis. Hammer, he is off to an incredible start this year. What looks different to you, if anything, for Domas to start this season?
Yeah, we talked about it during preseason. It's like there's no hesitation. You know, he gets a ball. Could he have taken like eight more shots in the first four games? Sure. Like there were shots that he passed on, but he's also one of the most gifted passers in the league and setup men for a center. So you don't want him shooting every single time, but everything that he's doing just feels like it's catch the ball and go, whether it's shooting, whether it's taking somebody off the dribble. It just feels like he really, really worked on sort of the mental aspect and the quick, you know, a second or less, you need to make a decision. It's not even that, 0.5 seconds or less. And all of a sudden it just like fully is materializing for him on the court. I don't even think he's forced anything, and he's averaging 24.5 points per game. Yeah. I think he can easily average, you know, 22, 23, 24. If he keeps this up, if this is the player he's going to be. And like no one in the league can stop him. You know, he's not Jokic, but he's the next best thing as a center. And so I definitely think that he's on the right path. And you know, if he can be a top 10, top 15 player for the Kings, you know, in the league, they're going to win a lot of games, especially with all the other talent they have around him.
You know, we kind of talked about how effortless, like you just mentioned, it is with what Domas is doing. But what it really shows to both of us and everybody is the work that he put in. You can look at his game and you can look at, you know, his bag, so to speak, and see that he's added to that bag. He's worked on his game. He's shot 1,000 jump shots a day or something like that. And just because it's not, you know, on Instagram or, like I said, Hoop Central didn't post a video, oh, he's in the lab, it doesn't mean he wasn't in the lab, because clearly you see in his game that he spent a lot of time working on his game this past summer. And I love to see the results of stuff like that from guys who dedicate themselves to the craft. And it's clear Domas, and not saying that nobody else didn't, I'm just talking about him specifically. He clearly dedicated himself to getting better and expanding his game this summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, look, I think people think I bring up Doug Christie because, you know, he's my friend and we spent a lot of time working together at NBC. But basically, him and Domas have been together nonstop the last two summers. And you can throw Leandro Barbosa in that, too. I mean, Doug was in Spain with him. And Leandro is, like, flying all over the place with him as well. I mean, they're inseparable during the summer. And there's a lot to putting the work that he's put in. You can see that it's not that he's working with a big man coach the whole time, that he's working with two players, that two former NBA players that are completely different than him, but have a lot to offer as far as like on the offensive and the defensive side. So I love what we're seeing so far. And I put a lot of credit into not just, you know, the coaches that have put in the time to work with him, but, you know, Doug has told me like, he just doesn't take any days off. He's like, it is crazy. I mean, Doug had his house flood because he was away working with Domas and a pipe broke and it flooded their kitchen and he came back home and this happened like last summer and it had flooded his kitchen and, you know, Jackie was doing her thing down in LA and they came home and like, what in the world? And it's because they weren't there. And so like, look, these guys have put in the work and it's not just, you know, you can't force a player to want it like this. Either they do or they don't. And Domas is one of those guys that just, he wants it so bad and he's going to do the work that has to, you know, to get there. But at the same time, a lot of this is changing his mental. It's changing his approach because he's too unselfish a lot of the time. And right now what we're seeing, I don't even think we're seeing it at like him being a selfish player. He's just being extremely good. Mm-hmm. And so I want to see what it looks like, you know, 40 games into the season and whether he regresses to who the player he always has been, which is the share first guy. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, like, this is going to be a really good season for Domas.
Yeah, this is a guy who had 10 assists, what, on Monday?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's not like he's just boycotted passing the ball. Like, he's still, you know, the guy who the offense kind of runs through. And you talk about the work that he put in. Some of that work was with DeMar, and obviously he's been with De'Aaron now for a few years. And James, you laying out the work ethic of Domantas Sabonis like that, and of course we saw the work ethic of DeMar DeRozan. We know Fox, like, that's got to play a part in why it feels like our big three is playing so well to start this season as a collective.
Well, and I think that's the crazy thing. You're calling them your big three, you know, and like I legitimately look at these guys as like a version of a big three. You've got the incredible low post player who's the second best passing big man in the league. And then on top of that, you got the speedster and then you got the ISO guy. Like, there's so much to like about the pairing here. And it, to be honest, it takes the Keegan Murrays and the Kevin Herters and the Trey Lyles around these guys to make it all work, because you need the floor spacing. But that doesn't change the fact that the Kings have three guys that on any given night can go for 30 or 40, and all three of them can go for, you know, 25, 30 together. And then you have all of these other pieces that they have to go with it. I really do think that the construction of the top end of the line of the rotation and the roster is really good. I think you still need, you know, some pieces here and there to shore up the defense and, you know, maybe get a true shot blocker in there and stuff like that. But at the same time, I really do think that they've built something here that if you're going to have three star level players like this, you have to have these other pieces. And if you don't, like, they're just going to, you'll see it the whole time. It'll stand out that they're just not good enough around them. And, you know, again, I don't want to compare them fully to like the LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh team. But look at how that team, again, Chris Bosh is probably the best three-point shooter of that group during that era, during their time together. And you had to surround him with Mario Chalmers, and you had to have all these other pieces. And that's what I think the Kings have done a nice job of doing as well, is just building out the whole thing But again, I still think that there's some pieces needed.
Another level to an aspect to what they're able to do or what they're trying to do is last night it was on display for me, their ability to finish games in different ways. And it wasn't a close game last night in the fourth quarter, but I think it might have been 15, 16, something like that. And it was just like, all right, it's time to put this one to bed. And they went to DeMar DeRozan creating. And he either dribbled the ball up, and it was a small-to-small pick and roll with him and Malik Monk, get the switch. DeRozan's at the elbow, and he just orchestrates everything, whether he's going one-on-one, whether he's dishing off to Monk if they help too much or whatever. And it was just another aspect of they've got this to be able to go to now. Fox didn't even play at that point. Fox could be a guy that initiates that. In the third quarter, we saw him and Domas with the high screen and roll doing their thing. And I said when they get about 10 more games into this season, you see how this offense orchestrates, and it's going to be a problem for teams, I'll just say, that aren't prepared to deal with what they're going to be bringing to the table. Very dynamic, very versatile.
It's going to be hard for the teams that are prepared. I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, if you look at the last 2 years, like, the Kings' offense wasn't as good as it was the first year of this build, but it was still really good. I mean, this was still a top, like, 13 offense, right? 13, 14. Like, they were the way that they, you know, they move together, the way that they run the DHO, and, you know, they get wide open looks all the time. I think when you add a guy like DeMar DeRozan, you just added a completely different element to this team, where I think this team over the last couple of years has gotten a little, even though it's flowing and it's a really cool style of offense, it got a little predictable. And now you have a guy who's totally unpredictable that you can throw into this. So when things do kind of get gummed up, or when a team does do something to take away Domantas Sabonis, you know, they throw two small guys on Domantas Sabonis, all of a sudden you can go to a guy like DeMar DeRozan and he can just cook you. Or you can, you know, go to a guy like Malik Monk or a guy like De'Aaron Fox, and all of them can cook you. So I don't think that there's a lot of ways to take away from the Kings, especially if you look at the starting lineup has been incredible, like off the charts. Like plus minus net rating, all that stuff. You look at their closing lineup, it too has been off the charts good. Even the new Keon Ellis and Malik Monk tandem coming in first with Domas and Keegan and DeMar has been so good as far as net rating. So if you can start filling in the other gaps and figuring out why this group or that group isn't working as well, once they start to get into that, I think this team can take even a much more substantial leap forward as far as like offensive rating and you know, points per game. And like, look, they haven't had to score 130 a game or 127 a game like they did in the opener, right? Mm-hmm. They've been able to get it done by controlling the pace of the game and just being the better team. And Kenny, to your point, like, I think the best way to not worry about the fourth quarter, who's going to score and all that stuff in the fourth quarter, it's just put teams away early. And I think this team has potential for that. We did see them slip up against the Lakers where they gave up all those points to start the fourth. But I think that there is a way that this team will put teams away really early, especially bad teams. And that's what you're hoping, that, you know, you don't have to run all these guys out there 38 minutes a game because you're trying to win. You can shut them down after, you know, if you've got a big lead 9 minutes into the fourth, it's over and you can start resting guys.
Hammer, is what we saw in these last two games, because you talked about the pairing of Keon and Malik coming into the game, and of course that was after, you know, Mike was questioned about Keon's lack of playing time, the DNP CD versus the Los Angeles Lakers. Do you think games like the last two nights help Mike kind of figure out what he wants to do with rotations, find out pairings that he likes together, find lineups, or does he look at them kind of more in a microwave in that, like, yeah, that was Portland, yeah, that was Utah, but when we're in a tight game versus the Knicks, or even if we're in a tight game versus Atlanta on Friday night, we might not be able to do that?
Yeah, I think Keon specifically, I do think that we're going to see from Mike a very similar rotation at least for the next week or two while he, you know, he sees how his team reacts. I think we'll see the first rotation in, the first people in the game will be that Monk and Ellis combo. Whether Keon gets to play, you know, 8 minutes or he gets to play 17 minutes, I think the really big thing for Keon was that he had a breakthrough game last night. And for me, it just, he did not look like himself. He did not look like the same player, you know, all the way through, through preseason and into the first, you know, he plays the first game. He doesn't play the second. He plays the third game and he was better, but he wasn't quite himself. Man, when you see him flying on the floor to go grab a loose ball, when you see him fly in for that putback or the chase down steal that he had, like, that's the player that we all saw last year and that we were excited to see this year. And he does, if he's going to be in that second unit with Monk and with Trey Lyles, he is going to have to be more of a scorer. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to crank that up because that second unit right now is not holding their own against, you know, anybody. Like, they're getting outscored by their bench unit is getting outscored massively. Part of that's because Mike isn't going deep to the bench and he's also limiting some of the minutes there. But I think Keon showed everybody, hey, look, I'm back. This is a player I was last year. I figured it out. Whatever was going on got out of his head. Maybe it was a little bit of starting, sitting, not knowing what's coming next. But whatever it was, like, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. That's the perfect glue guy to throw in your lineup. And so kudos to Keon for finding himself. And I think he'll be in the lineup a lot more.
I think he should be.
Well, I think a lot of people think he should be.
I think he should be.
Including Keith Smith, who will join us tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, man. Just watching him in the last two games, but specifically last night, I thought he was incredible last night. I thought what he was doing on the defensive end, the activity that he had on the defensive end, was phenomenal. And it's you've got to find minutes for him. I don't think me and Damian were talking about this earlier. He's not saying he's a starter necessarily, but he's more than a situational guy. Like, I don't know what the minutes are, but you got to find some minutes for him in a game to give him the opportunity to see if he can put his imprint on the game.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I want to point out that, like, look, we're 4 games into this thing, right? And we saw how bad Kevin Huerter sort of looked in the first game, how he improved in the second game, but had, like, the worst plus minus ever. But game 3, how all of a sudden he was really good. And then game 4, how he was even better. And so while I think a lot of people are focused on Keon Ellis, I'm pointing out that Mike probably did what was best for everybody here by forcing Kevin Huerter to get back on the court and work through it and get in game shape and be the player that he has been in the past. Mm-hmm. Because now all of a sudden you have this dynamic 3-point shooter who's playing well defensively, who's a good passer, who somehow has, like, 4 blocks on the season. Anyway, Kevin Huerter, to me, like, you don't want to just, you know, it's like the throw the baby out with the bathwater thing. You can't just, like, abandon people. And I know that Keon maybe felt like he got abandoned a little bit, but Mike's already brought him back into the fold.
Well, Kevin did get abandoned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got abandoned last year.
We got abandoned, but when? Like, when he got hurt?
Well, no. I mean, at the beginning, like, Mike's fuse with Kevin was short last year. I agree with what you just said about letting Kevin play through it. Like, I 1,000% agree with that. Mm-hmm. That's what should have happened last year. And Mike should be commended for that, because in my opinion. I think Mike made that mistake last year, and if he made a conscious decision to correct it, I think that's 1,000% the right thing to do.
Like, look, he didn't abandon Kevin completely, though. I mean, Kevin still started.
A lot.
And like, and I would also
tell you, KZ started too, but it didn't really mean anything.
No, I get that. But I would also say, like, there was a reason. Like, you got into training camp, and it's not like Mike was just doing something willy-nilly. He clearly had an idea of something going wrong with Kevin already. And then when they got into the regular season, it was like, oh, boy.
He manifested
He was searching for answers.
Yeah, that's right.
Answers. And, you know, he thought he might have found something with Chris Duarte, and then very quickly realized that was not the answer.
Nope.
Went back to Kevin, tried to get Kevin through it. But look, like sometimes that's what you're dealing with. And I think Keon is a different type of player and a different type of personality where, you know, maybe he could handle what just happened a little bit better, especially as a guy who's fighting his way into the league. So I don't know if Mike did everything right here, but at the same time, like, this team moving forward is so much better if Kevin Huerter is a player that we've seen in the last three games.
100%. What Mike is doing right now is on point.
Yeah.
I agree.
I absolutely love what Mike's doing. As a matter of fact, I think Kevin Huerter warrants more conversation. We should talk about how well he is playing, and we'll do that with James Hamm, our Kings insider from the Insiders. We're dealing with Casey Return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. And setting my prize pick lineup for tonight is Anthony Davis going over 26.5. Man, I got LeBron going over 23.
You know when I got?
Man, this is tough.
You know when I got that people kind of sleeping on a little bit? I got Zach LaVine more than 22 points tonight.
Who they
Zach
got?
Zach LaVine been hooping. They got Orlando.
Orlando.
But Zach LaVine been hooping. They been hooping.
Oh, man, this is tough.
Oh, there's Tyrese, 18.5. Less.
I'm going less.
Oh, is not been less. Scoring.
Going less. James Hamm here with us. James, we were talking just a moment ago about Kevin Huerter and kind of the way Mike has just let him go out there and play after playing through kind of a rough first game. Really getting going a little bit against the Los Angeles Lakers, played really well in these last two games. I think Kevin has had a really nice start to the season, Hammer, and we looked at the numbers, and you know, the 10 last year, the 15 the prior year, we had hypothesized all offseason, could he find a happy medium in the place between his best year of his career and the worst year of his career, and right now, four games into the season, that's exactly where he's at. He's in the middle of those two.
Yeah, he actually is right where he was in the like four seasons before the Kings traded for him, like right at 12 points per game. But he's shooting the ball really well, shooting over 40%. You can see his confidence growing. I talked about this with Kyle on the Insiders. He leads the league in 2-point field goal percentage. He's shooting 90% from two so far this season. So like, it's not just the three, but I also think like, look, he looks really good coming off the screen. And this is exactly the type of, if the Kings didn't have Kevin Huerter, they would be looking for a player like him, or they would be playing Doug McDermott more minutes. Like, they need this type of player. And like, whether he's going to be able to keep this going all season long, I don't know. Like, he's probably going to hit a wall, especially trying to fight back after all this time. But I'd also tell you, I think he's in better shape than he's ever been in his entire life. And so that's a good thing for the Kings. I didn't particularly think he came out last season and was in all that great shape.
And he acknowledged as much. Yeah, he acknowledged as much last year.
That's not the case this year. And I'll tell you too, I talked to somebody the other day about the Devin Carter situation. Like, hey, when is, you know, how's Devin Carter doing as far as like in the process? I was like, he's already been cleared for shooting, but nothing else. Like, he can work out. He can, you know, he's still, like, they won't reevaluate fully until January. He won't be cleared until then. The person I was talking to said, like, look at what Kevin Huerter did. And when Kevin Huerter was cleared to come back for different steps, he was so ready and so far ahead of where he should be that it was like a no-brainer. As soon as he got to one step, he was able to clear that and go to the next step, and then clear that and go to the next step. And they gave a really, really big nod to Kevin for being ready, but also Now the team is hoping that they have a pathway for Devin Carter to get back on the court before the season's over. It really does depend if he does the work that, just like Kevin did, to get into the perfect shape and to be ready for when you are cleared for contact, or you're cleared to, you know, whatever, like full workouts and all that stuff, which is still, you know, probably 2.5 months away. But you're hoping that as a young player, he takes it to heart and he's learning and he's getting ready to return as soon as possible.
There was a play last night with Kevin Herter that I was just really happy to see. And it told me a lot about, you know, where he's at mentally and physically. There was a leak out, a little bit outlet pass from DeMar DeRozan. Herter had to wait for the ball to get to him, so he wasn't able to, like, on the run, go lay it up. So he got the ball. Jordan Clarkson had caught up with him, and he was on Herter's left hip. And Herter dipped that shoulder in, bodied him up with the left shoulder in all one motion, laid it up with the left hand, and I said, oh, he's feeling good. That's the surgically repaired shoulder. And he didn't think twice. Didn't think twice about looking for that contact, about getting physical. And it goes into a number of the things that you just talked about. Number one, him being in great shape, being strong out there. Number two, the confidence he's playing with. And number three, seems like he's not even thinking about, you know, the injury or not playing hesitant at all, man. So I loved that play last night.
Yeah, like, look, it's going to be a process. Like, anybody who takes that much time off, it's not easy to just jump right back in and have, like, a straight ascension to the top back to who you were as a player. But so far, I think the early returns are really good for Kevin. And he's a lot more versatile than just a three-point shooter. And, you know, even 2 years ago, he was number 20. He finished number 20 in the NBA in two-point field goal percentage. I think we all just look at him as, like, this three-point guy. But he has a lot more versatility to his game. And if he settles in and gets comfortable with this group, there are times where you can almost use him in the same play sets that you use DeMar DeRozan. You can also get him in the two-man game with Domantas Sabonis a whole bunch. Like, there is a lot of versatility that he brings to the court. And again, this team, they're better having Kevin Herter than they are not having Kevin Herter. Mm-hmm. And that's not how a lot of people felt last season, and it's not how they felt, like, early, like, when Kevin started to return in game one and stuff. But at the end of the day, like, this is a very good NBA player, and you don't just want to leave anyone behind, but specifically a guy who's still, like, 26 years old, under contract for this year and next, you know, has an elite skill in shooting, and you just hope that he gets right on, that he stays on this path that he's on right now.
Man, the better he is, the better this team is.
Yep.
I love the start he's had to the season. What do you think of the start De'Aaron has had to the season? Has he pulled back a little bit to kind of let this all come together?
Yeah, you know, I would like to talk to him about it a little bit more. He doesn't come in the locker room until, like, the last 2 minutes of our media availability on regular game nights. And, you know, you don't want to ask him in a big scrum setting about, like, where mentally he is. I think he's trying to be a good teammate and trying to watch how the team is blending and where he fits into it right now. And I think, like, he's always one of those players that he's kind of a thinking man's player, and he's trying to figure out how he can best, like, apply his talents. And that's not easy to do on the fly when you drop in a 35-year-old NBA legend, a guy who's going to be a Hall of Famer, and DeMar DeRozan. It's just not super simple. And so I think Fox is searching a little bit for, like, his moments, and he's had a few of them. You know, he's had a 28-point game or whatever, but consistently he hasn't been, like, the offensive force. And I think the team wants to get they want to get DeMar DeRozan going so they can show teams around the league, like, look, we have this other element to who we are. And they also, like, Domantas Sabonis is just rolling on his own. There's, you know, what he does is so specific, and he has the ball in his hands quite a bit. And then you hope that there's a moment where De'Aaron just goes, okay, I see my lane, and this is how I'm going to be successful with this group. and he takes off from there. Like, he's not doing anything wrong. He's averaging a career high, like, what, 7.5 assists, although it's only 4 games. He's over 20 points per game. His shooting percentage from 3 isn't great, but neither is anyone else on the team, especially early in the season, except for maybe Kevin Herter at this point, and Domas from 3. But you're seeing that this is kind of who he is, that he likes to get comfortable in a setting before he really starts to sort of blossom. And you just hope that it's sooner rather than later that he starts to, you know, really put his foot on the gas. And don't discredit too, like, this team's on the road for 8 days. And, like, these guys have a lot going on at home. Like, you know, De'Aaron Fox has a little baby girl and a little boy that, you know, is learning to live with a little sister. And, you know, like, there's a lot going on for these guys. So when they do get away, they're going to spend time together. They all went out to dinner last night. Chris Biederman told us earlier on the show, you know, you want these guys to spend time together and bond and sort of find their way. And really the only way to do that is to go hit these little road trips and hopefully they come back and they're just, you know, better connected. And it's tough, but I think Fox will find his way. What I don't want to see him do is to slip into the mode that he did with Tyrese Haliburton, where he never really felt like he found his role alongside of Tyrese. And then eventually you had to trade one of them. And I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think he's trying to ease into the season and let this thing kind of grow organically before he starts putting his stamp on games. And I think we'll see more and more of it over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm with that as well. I also think, I was telling D'Lo this earlier, I also think that, you know, at his core, I think De'Aaron Fox is like a true point guard. I think he can score. He may even, you know, be, if he's asked to score 27 points a night, like, he'll do it. He can do it or whatever. But I've always believed, and I think, Amber, you've seen it a little different, and you're a little closer to it, so maybe you would know. But I've always thought he was just a pure point guard. And if you put him in a situation where he is right now, where he could be 21, 22, 7-8 assists a night, I think he's more apt to doing that as opposed to score 29 a night with 5 assists. Like, I just always looked at him as a little bit more of a point guard, and I'll get mine when I need to, as opposed to like an Allen Iverson type guard.
I think you're probably right, but that's not who he wants to be this year. Like, everyone knows that if he's all NBA, that, you know, he gets a gigantic boost in pay. Mm-hmm. And so let's not fool ourselves here. There's going to come a moment where De'Aaron Fox is putting up 30 points every single night and, like, get the hell out of my way, I'm going to score. Because that's how you get paid. That's how I see people that in the chat saying he doesn't care about, like, the awards. Oh, no. This year he does. Like, and it's not because he's selfish or anything else, but it's because that's the NBA rules make it so. You know, if you want to get paid, you got to make all NBA. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make all NBA and you're dealing with, you know, 8 other guards that are around you in the Western Conference, or, well, between the East and the West, that are all, you know, doing amazing things, you got to win and you've got to put up a bunch of points, because points is how dudes in the NBA still get paid.
Mm-hmm. Man. So, I speculated earlier, he approaching this season like, yo, I did 30 for the month, first 3 months of the season, and no one cared. I'm just going to do it the last 3 months of the season.
Yeah. Or, like, start in December, mid-December, and just start rolling just as the NBA, you know, season officially kicks off. You know, you're still going to have, like, the in-season tournament. What are they calling it now?
The NBA Cup.
The NBA, there we go. So you're going to have that where, again, he's going to get more exposure and everything else. But I think we're going to see him start to ramp up very quickly because he knows what's at stake. Mm-hmm. And for that matter, his teammates would know what's at stake too. And they all want him to succeed. They all want him there. And they all want him to get paid. You know, they all know that it's going to, you know, eventually, like, you do run out of money as a franchise. But, you know, no one in that locker room is hoping that De'Aaron Fox doesn't make all NBA because they're worried about how much he makes. They all want him to get paid. And I think we're going to see this team really make a push for him once he hits a green light and says, okay, it's go time. Right now, I just think they're trying a lot of things. They're trying to get comfortable with each other. But then there's some hidden things that I'll point out. Like, I don't think the crash zone has worked out as well as they thought early in the season, although the last two games they've had 9 offensive rebounds.
Can you explain that again, the crash zone?
The crash zone, yeah, the offensive rebound. So what the crash zone is the two guys who are in the corner.
I think Mark referenced it the other night, too. That's why I wanted you to explain it. I think Mark referenced the crash zone a couple nights ago.
So this season, the corner three guys, when the ball goes up, they are supposed to crash for the offensive glass. And the Kings were, you know, most teams worry about transition buckets, right? But the numbers state that teams that are better at offensive rebounds, they don't necessarily give up a bunch of transition buckets. Because when you go in for an offensive rebound, guys have to put a body on you so they're not leaking out. Guys have to, you know, like everyone is going up for a rebound, plus it kind of log jams everything in the middle. So there are guys that are able to get back and set the defense. So the Kings' goal this season is for anybody who's in the corner, as soon as an offensive shot goes up, they are breaking for like right in front of the free throw line. So they're all trying to converge and try to get the long rebound. And that's how you get the spray threes. And, you know, it's exactly what Kevon Looney did to the Sacramento Kings a couple of years ago in the playoffs, when he just sat there and kept getting like 8 or 9 offensive rebounds and then popping it right out to wide open shooters for threes, which killed the Kings. So the Kings are trying to make that a point of emphasis this year. And so, like, it depends on how everybody does with that. But I don't think it's gone all that well to start the season. They had, I think, 9 total offensive rebounds in the first two games. They're 30th in the league in offensive rebounds right now, even though this was a point of emphasis. So it's clearly something that they're going to have to get better at. And guys are going to lose minutes if they're not doing it. That's it. Like, the team wants this as one of their things. But my other point would be that while that's not working, we used to see anybody who got a rebound could take off and start running with the ball, right? How many times do we see Chimezie Metu leading a break and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Chimezie Metu is leading the break. Yes, Domantas Sabonis doing spin moves at half court, all that stuff. They're, this season, if you watch, they are firing the ball up. They're looking for outlet passes and trying to skip that whole dribble the ball up and go straight down court. And I think it's been really good. This is one of the best fast break teams in the league already. And it can get way better. I think that they can get much better at sort of that open break, especially if teams aren't ready for them and sort of this sort of mentality that they have right now.
Hammer, these games coming up over the weekend, we've kind of outlined them, you know, two teams that probably don't have aspirations of being contenders. Maybe the Hawks do. I don't know. But, you know, is there something specifically that you're looking at in these two games coming up on Friday and Saturday, or is it just win? That's the obviously the most important thing, but is there something a little more? Do you want to see De'Aaron Fox take over or anything like that?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, De'Aaron Fox has always played extremely well against the Hawks, partially because Trae Young is there. So I think that's just naturally he's going to go at Trae. But they also, you know, I think Dyson Daniels has played really well. I think Dyson Daniels is dinged and might not be able to play, and that would be huge because he's been excellent. And Bogdan Bogdanovic had a procedure, and he is out as well. We had this discussion on the Insiders earlier about Bogdanovic and his procedures. Some reason his people don't like to call whatever he has surgeries, so they're always procedures.
Yeah, the facelift.
yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what happened here, but
a little tummy tuck, and he needs a couple days off.
BBL,
yeah.
James, so, do you know what BBL stands for?
No.
Okay, that's okay. That's all right.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's okay. So anyway,
I don't look it up. Don't look it up, James.
I won't.
Okay.
I won't.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I won't also look up Fournier either ever again.
Oh my.
Oh. No. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
Evan Fournier? No. Don't look up what his last name actually means. There's no.
Oh, dear God.
So, yeah, go. Now you're all wondering, and now you're all going to.
I'm not going to look it up. I will take James Ham's word for it.
Yeah, take my word for it. I think these two teams coming up, they're just both really beatable. I mean, Scotty Barnes is out.
That's right. Yep.
Broke his eye orbit. He's out like
he'll miss both.
Right?
Yeah, he'll miss both Kings games coming up here. His reevaluation date is set for, I think, three weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks.
Yeah. The one thing I will tell you is that both of these teams are physical in the post. And so Okongwu is playing really, really well. Clint Capella has given the Kings fits like multiple times in his career. You got a young guy in Reece Achet that we have no idea what he's going to look like. I think there is going to be a little bit of a battle there. And then when you get to Toronto, same thing, a little bit of a battle. They're strong. They're physical. And you asked me whether Keon Ellis would play. Man, Keon Ellis better play against these two teams because between Trey and, you know, what he does and how he can get on a heater. And then again, up in Toronto with Emmanuel Quickley. Emmanuel Quickley is so physical and so tough to defend. I think you're going to need a guy like Keon Ellis in the next couple of games.
I chuckled because Reece Achet, did you hear his quote last night or something? He's like, yeah, back in France, I was super athletic and I was, you know, one of the most athletic guy. And now I'm just another guy.
You're just a dude.
Oh, that's tough. That is tough.
Poor young fella. You'll get there, young fella. You got to go through the rookie wall real quick, but you'll get there.
Oh, the rookie wall. Four games in. Oh, man, that damn rookie wall.
He might have said, I'm just regular now. I think.
Oh, that is tough. Yeah. Oh, buddy, don't say that out loud.
Man, look at what Sasha. Sasha came here like, oh, boy. Like, look at the athleticism. He's gone back to Europe, and he's going to win the MVP. He's a superstar again. Sasha, he's been incredible in Europe.
Yeah, so let's dead the EuroLeague talk moving forward. It's the second most competitive. That might be true, but let's stop it.
Hey, but Dame, the one time that you didn't take the EuroLeague star, look what happened.
It wasn't me. I didn't. I wasn't in the war room that day.
That's true. That's true. Everyone else was.
That's your boy, who Kenny wants to give a standing ovation every time he walks in the building.
Absolutely. It's the Vlade Divac. Yes. Yes.
He doesn't need a standing ovation. He doesn't need a standing ovation. Ladies and gentlemen, Vlade Divac. Okay. Sit down, sir. That's all we need. He's fine. He's always welcome in Sacramento.
Hey, give Seth the Entertainer a ovation. Give Vlade Divac one.
Well, Cedric the Entertainer didn't draft Marvin Bagley.
It was Reggie Jackson and Cedric the Entertainer there the other night. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Reggie Jackson was probably angry to be here, too.
That's what I've heard about him.
I've never heard anyone say, hey, you know who's a really nice guy? Reggie Jackson. Never heard that before.
I'm with you.
The baseball player, not the basketball player. This would be clear. Yeah. The baseball player, not the basketball player.
It's through October.
No.
Yep. Yankees, you use him right about now with Aaron Judge out there.
Well, no, Aaron Judge is back. He got a base hit. No. And he had a walk in the first inning, too.
Man, that's the MVP.
He's back.
Allegedly.
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, yeah, Ron Artest was there, too. Thank you, Katrina. Thank you.
Got a walk in the first inning, so.
Well, it's meta.
Change it again.
Is it Meta World Stanfield?
No.
No, what is it?
Ron Stanfield.
Oh, was Ron is back?
I thought it was
Meta. I don't think Ron's back.
I think Meta, because Meta was the only thing I recognized.
It's Meta.
I don't know.
Yeah, he changed the rest of it.
It's Meta. I feel like, I don't know if it's Meta World Stanfield, but there's, I feel like.
Peace is gone.
Peace is definitely gone.
World is gone.
Yeah. World is gone.
Panda's friend is gone.
He's Meta Standiford Artest.
Artest.
Wait, really? Artest
is
back?
Right.
Yeah, Standiford dash Artest.
Yeah, hyphen. There we go.
All right. Hey, what? Okay. Show. I think the show's over. Oh, all right. We gotta go. Where are we going? Baseball? Run it back and then baseball?
No, just baseball. Go Dodgers.
All right.
Whoa!
Well, we'll see.
Go Dodgers. We gotta go.
Well, see you tomorrow.
Vamos Yankees.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.